Welcome to another episode of Nashville Anthems, a podcast that delves into what makes 80s and 90s country music particularly work. I'm your host, Melton McManerberry, and I want to thank the Blanchard House Band for supplying the theme music for today's episode. Some call it country with a little bit of rhythm and blues, and I guess you can count me among them, because that's what I'm hearing in this episode's selection, The Judds, Girls' Night Out. So, if you haven't already, I hope you'll pause this podcast and give Girls' Night Out a close listen or two, or three. And now let's get into it. First off, we want to give credit where credit is due. Girls' Night Out is part of the Judds' 1984 debut album, Why Not Me? For my money, that's their best, but I think that's a minority opinion. Anyway, it was released as a single in 1985 and did what Judds' singles tended to do. It went to number one on the country charts. Girls' Night Out was written by Jeffrey Bullock and the Judds producer and frequent songwriter Brent Mayer. So, there's a lot we could say about the Judds. Their personal story is, well, not even a country song, really a tabloid cover story. It's not pretty. I'm going to skip all that, though, because it's not really what this podcast is about. And also, Cocaine Rhinestones has done a great episode on the Judds that covers all that, if you're interested in hearing more about it. But musically, which is what this podcast is about, the Judds are right up there with Reba, George Strait, Randy Travis in terms of influence and contribution to that neo-traditionalist movement of the 80s that came to define the country music that came after it. To say that the Judds dominated country music in the 80s is not an exaggeration. Somehow it feels to me like the Judds have faded in popularity over time more than those other names, and that may be because their career ended so abruptly when the decade flipped over and neo-traditionalism completely took over. But I also don't think their music has aged quite as well as those others I mentioned, and I'll say more about that once we get into the meat of the song. But for now, let me just say, for any who aren't as familiar with the country music of their era, that the Judds were a big deal in the 80s, inside and outside of country music, and it's going to be fun to explore this early example of what they were about. Okay, so what do I mean by that? What were the Judds about in Girls' Night Out? Well, I hear two things going on here, and both are typical of the Judds. Girls' Night Out is an acoustic song with attitude. So first off, the song is acoustic. So let's talk about the instrumentation on Girls' Night Out, which not only defines this particular song, but really the Judds' sound in general. They were very committed to this acoustic concept, and Girls' Night Out is a perfect early example. The song is instrumentally dominated by, I think it's three acoustic guitars, and maybe two with that rhythm guitar double-tracked. So it's a very full acoustic rhythm guitar sound, and the rhythm is just lively. There's a lot of personality in what that rhythm guitar is playing. The guitars are close mic'd as well. You can hear the fret noise, hear the pick hitting the strings. It's like the acousticness or acousticality. I'm not sure how to make that word a noun. It's not acoustics. Anyway, the fact of the songs being acoustic is emphasized in how up in the mix and close mic'd these acoustic guitars are. The lead guitar is also acoustic, an unusual move, and one that really shows the commitment the Judds and producer Brent Mayer had to this acoustic concept. It would be easy to hear those lead guitar licks on a Telecaster. The Judds had a concept with these acoustic guitars, and they stuck to it. So I'd say even more than the vocal harmony, this particular kind of bluesy acoustic flavor is really the Judds' trademark. But more on that bluesy attitude in a moment. As far as the rest of the instrumentation on Girls' Night Out, inside of that full acoustic soundscape, you have steel guitar in places, you have piano in places, and of course, bass and drums. And the bass and drums are playing a basic cut time beat with a little something extra. It swings a bit more than otherwise it had to. There's a little more pizzazz in the rhythm of this song. Not a lot, just little touches, little bits of flair that keep the song full of character from top to bottom. No doubt, I'm gonna dance every dance till the boys go home. It's a bit sassy, this rhythm track, a bit more in-your-face than you might otherwise expect. Nothing like the almost comically straight rhythm track that we talked about in Summer's Coming. It marries well with those bluesy acoustic guitars and with Winona's unique voice. And all of that points to the second part of that Judd's formula. Because it's not just that they're acoustic. If you're trying to get to the secret sauce of Girls' Night Out and of the Judds more broadly, just noting that it's all acoustic doesn't get it done. There was other acoustic country music in the mid-80s, especially among those neo-traditionalists we mentioned earlier, but what differentiated the Judds is that they put out acoustic music with attitude. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, musically, the kind of saucy, sassy, bluesy attitude of this song comes from how it plays with the tones and chords that inhabit the song, kind of refusing to be the straight country song people like George Strait and Randy Travis were putting out at the time. Not that there's anything wrong with that, of course. Those guys were making timeless classics. But the Judds were definitely doing something different. Now, if you've listened to Nashville Anthems much, I bet you can see what's about to come coming. Girls' Night Out plays a lot with the commonly played with third degree of the chord. You know I was going to say that, didn't you? Because we've talked about this a lot, how the third is kind of the fun one in the triad. We said a lot about the different roles the first, third, and fifth degrees tend to play in a triad in our last episode, so I'll skip a lot of that here. But if you remember, major thirds can go down a half step and make a minor chord, or a blues chord, so to speak, similarly. And they can go up a half step and make a suspended chord. And do they ever do those things in Girls' Night Out? You hear it right at the beginning with the acoustic guitar. Actually, let me pause there for a second, because I spent a now embarrassing amount of time in the last episode talking about how rare it is to put an acoustic guitar-driven song in the key of F sharp. So naturally, the very next song we cover is in, you guessed it, F sharp. That's right. So, yeah. You know what? Let's call this one G flat so it at least sounds like a different key from the one I mocked last week. Okay, so that acoustic guitar at the beginning is playing a G flat major chord. It plays this intro that also functions as a motif in and around the verses. It sounds something like this. The note you're hearing changing is, you guessed it, the third degree of that G-flat major chord. That's a B-flat. The acoustic guitar plays these relentlessly and deliciously syncopated eighth notes on the backbeat. Now, the song is in cut time, so you can be on the backbeat and syncopated at the same time. See? Mind blown. Anyway, each eighth note pair alters the third of the chord from its previous state. So it goes major, suspended, major, minor, major, suspended, major, minor, over and over. Especially when it goes down to the minor, coupled with the fact that it's syncopated, it bluesifies the song right off the bat in a major way. Because if you remember from past episodes, kind of sneaking a minor third into an otherwise major chord is essentially a defining blues move. The natural darkness, the natural dissonance, the natural mystery, see the rodeo episode for all this unpacked, lends saucy character to the song from start to finish. Now, we hear this in the vocal melody also. Similar to what we talked about in other bluesy songs, particularly rodeo, it's very difficult to say exactly what notes Winona is singing a lot of the time, because she is playing so much with pitch as she sings. It's masterful. You can give me a little rock and roll, or even a waltz with the lights down low. And kind of like Ain't Going Down Till the Sun Comes Up, the vocals start right off the bat with that blue note, the minor third. As we were just saying, the song starts on a G-flat chord, which is the key the song is in, But Winona's vocals start with the out of chord note A major. Friday, I did my time. Okay, it's really B double flat if you're thinking in G flat. Welcome to the world of the Black Keys. But anyway, it just goes from there. Lots more flattening of thirds in her vocals, plenty of sevenths. That also happens very early in the verse. Bent pitches, in between pitches. That's how Winona sings, and we'll get more into that in a moment. But musically, the other attitudinal feature I want to mention is how the song plays with traditional chords. So, as I said, the song is in G flat. So your typical 1-4-5 chords are G flat, C flat, yes, C flat, and D flat. So the song plays its share of those chords, but it adds several others that are less expected, especially so in where it sometimes goes from those out-of-key chords. One of them is in that part of the verse that says, "Tonight ain't nothing gonna slow me down." Tonight ain't nothing gonna slow me down. It comes up about four times with different lyrics each time, but with the same melody. And there, the chords go 4, a flat 7, 4 chord, 1 chord. So after hanging around on the 1 chord for several bars in the verse, it kicks up to the 4 chord for a few bars before returning to the 1, which is what would happen in 12-bar blues, as I feel like we've beaten to death on Nashville anthems at this point. But the twist here is that rather than staying on the 4 chord, it slips another chord in during that 4 chord period. And that chord is a flat 7 chord, which in this key is an F flat. That's right, an F flat. So it goes C flat, C flat, F flat, C flat, G flat. I want to hear a band with a country sound. And that flat 7 chord is significant because the root of that chord, the F flat itself, is a blue note in the key of G flat. So even at the chord level, if you will, the song early and often injects some saucy attitude. Now, there are also a bunch of major 2 chords in this song. In fact, they are part of the repeating pattern in the chorus of 1, 2 major, 5, 1, 2 major, 5, 1. And there's some character there as well. It's kind of the opposite of what we just talked about. The repeating 2 major functions to lift the song up, to keep it pointing upward. We talked about that effect in the How Your Love Makes Me Feel episode. It's like just before dark, jump in the car. Well, it's a girl's night out, honey, there ain't no doubt. 2 major chord pops up in the verse also, or I guess it's more like a pre-chorus, but anyway, it's the part where Winona sings, "I've been cooped up all week long." Well, I've been cooped up all week long. The song, out of nowhere, almost changes keys. It just suddenly raises up from the G flat, the 1 chord, to A flat, the 2 major chord, and it just sits there for a few bars, like it's the most natural thing in the world to do. Like, it's a girl's night out, and it's a sudden pseudo-key change, and if you have a problem with either of those, that's your problem, not the song's, or the Judd's. It's a move that's saucy because of its nonchalance. It's like it hasn't even considered that someone might take musical exception to it. It's Friday, the work week's over, and it's going to let its musical hair down and do what it feels like doing, come what may. And where does it go from there, by the way? To the 5 chord, like the chorus does? Following the circle of fifths like a good girl? No way. It raises up again to a major 3 chord of all things. A B flat major in this key. I've been working my... And not one that leads to a minor chord like you might expect if you know your theory. In fact, there really aren't any minor chords in this upbeat song. Instead, it goes right back to the standard 1-4-5, but far from settling down, that's the vocal climax where Winona is belting out some pretty high notes for a kind of in-between alto and soprano like she is. She's up at a C flat and a D flat at that point, pretty high in the female range. Fingers to the bone. So let's talk about Winona's vocals, shall we? We've been hovering around them the whole time in this episode. And Winona's vocals, let's just say, are absolutely what stood out about the Judds and this particular song vocally. First off, there is a ton of natural color in her voice. It's that round, rich sound that I labored to describe in our first episode, the one on Patti Loveless. Two-step or the cotton-eyed Joe, they can play them fast or they can play them slow. It's rich, it's kind of dark and bluesy, it's full. It's just an outstanding and intriguing voice. It's one that makes you want to keep listening because there's a lot going on in there. And it feels natural. I don't know if you've heard the term hip singing. I like that term. It's something you hear a lot of female vocalists doing these days. Men have their own version of it too, don't get me wrong. But it's this highly affected attempt at sounding kind of like a blue-eyed, rootsy, soulful hipster. That's almost the default style now. And yeah, that's Dot Wynonna. It doesn't sound affected at all, but rather just what happens when she opens her mouth and uses her vocal cords. It's that organic, that natural. She just sounds a lot like Ronnie Dunn to me. I guess I should say the other way around, shouldn't I? She was famous first. But there's a lot of natural color and richness in Ronnie Dunn's voice also, and it's what made his vocals so perfect for Neon Moon. Oh, but I'll be all right as long as there's light from a neon moon. There's an analogous thing going on vocally with Brooks and Dunn and the Judds. Maybe not coincidentally, because as I said, the Judds were the thing in country music right before Brooks and Dunn came on the scene and started winning all the Vocal Duo of the Year awards. But the overwhelming majority of Brooks and Dunn's hits featured Dunn on lead vocal, while Kix Brooks was more the stage presence who happened also to sing the low harmony. Similarly, every Judds song featured Wynonna on lead vocals, with Naomi more carrying the performance load on stage while, again, covering the low harmony. Let's talk about that, actually, because the Judds' mother-daughter harmony is certainly part of the secret sauce. Now, their harmony is fairly tight, and it is on this song, but, you know, honestly, there is and was plenty of unremarkable harmony out there that's just as tight. I think why their harmony really stands out is because Naomi does something that I discussed rarely happening in the Summer's Coming episode. She matches Wynonna's bluesy tones in her harmony. So this is difficult to do well. It often just doesn't really make harmonic sense to follow the blue notes in a melody with your own bluish notes in the harmony. But Naomi does it, especially in the chorus and in that "I can do it all, just show me the floor" line. Seemingly, organically, Naomi just bluesifies her harmony, her alto part, and in so doing, she amps up that attitude that Girls' Night Out has. Fittingly, for a song that's called Girls' Night Out, she makes the attitude more like group sass than individual sass. I can do them all, just show me the floor. These girls are unified in their saucy, liberated approach to this excursion. Tonight ain't nothing gonna slow them down. Let's dig into that a little bit more, because here we are in the heart of the neo-traditionalist movement of the 80s. Yeah, it's neo, right? But let's not forget it's also traditionalist. And this song comes at us with a feminist attitude. This is a girls' night out. Where are the boys? For that matter, where are the men? Who is going to protect these women while they are out flaunting their freedom, inviting who knows what? Where are their boyfriends, their husbands? Where are their fathers? These women are, in fact, independent and so confident in their opportunity and ability to take care of themselves that they celebrate and flaunt it. Notice, too, that there is no romance in this song. It's easy to take for granted that any pop song is going to have that, but partners, if you will, are barely mentioned in this song. And then it's only to celebrate the fact that they are making more room on the dance floor for the girls because they are going home. This is a night out dancing, but if these girls are dancing with the boys who are out, there is no such indication in the song. It sounds very much like they are dancing independently and enjoying it thoroughly. And I think we have to acknowledge the for-the-time, in-your-face feminism of that sort of independence. Now, I caveated that last bit by trying to put it in context, and I want to talk about that idea a bit more because of something I alluded to in the first part of this episode. Has this song, in fact, aged poorly? This is something I'd really like to hear from some of you on. Help me out here, because I'm doing the two-step or the Cotton Eye Joe on a very thin line here, and it's a difficult one to define. But it feels to me like with time, this song crossed that dance line from sassy to a little corny. I actually think the Judds were flirting with this all along, because setting bluesy instrumental tracks and vocals in a dogmatically acoustic soundscape was an unusual move for a reason. Was it groundbreaking or just disjointed? The sass, at least, almost falls flat because of the acoustic setting. Compare it to something like fellow 80s girl group Heart, which is as committedly electric as the Judds were acoustic, and it maybe doesn't require as much effort to suspend disbelief when you're listening to Heart, at least through modern eyes. What about love? Don't you want someone to care about you? That disparity of key elements doesn't really apply to those other 80s titans that I mentioned, folks like Reba McEntire, George Strait, Randy Travis. Throw Alabama and late 80s Clint Black and Garth Brooks in there too while you're at it. All of those feel more cohesive in their approach. So, which is it? Were the Judds more adventurous in their approach? Were they willing to take risks that others weren't? Or did they miss the musical mark a bit? Or in such a way that is more felt now for whatever reason than it was then? I need to know, and it feels again like we are right at that big secret sauce question that this podcast is all about. So, do write me. I know you're listening out there, but I rarely hear from y'all. Write me at meltonmcmainerberry@gmail.com. I'll spell that. It's meltonmcmainerberry@gmail.com. Or maybe it's easier to search for Nashville Anthems on Instagram and go there and let me know your thoughts on this particular question. In the meantime, the sun is about to come up, so it's time to end this girl's night out and head home for 2 weeks until the next episode of Nashville Anthems. So, let's find out what song we'll be covering. To that end, I'm going to pull up Satellite Radio's 80s and 90s country station right now and see what's playing. The song is David Frizzell. I'm gonna hire a wino to decorate our home. So join me in 2 weeks and let's see what happens. Thanks a lot for listening. See you next time. I gotta go. I gotta get to work.